Good morning. It is the end of January as I'm pre-recording this, and it is extremely cold. It's gotten to the negatives for the first time, and I have three pairs of pants on currently, but that has nothing to do with this episode. It is one of my favorite episodes that I recorded when I went home for winter break, and Gabby Chioka is the perfect person to dissect a pop culture book with us today, and so I hope that you get a lot out of this discussion of the very popular Crazy Rich Asians trilogy. Hello, and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now, bookmark that book, and let's begin.
Did I introduce myself?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, I'm Gabby. Nice to meet everyone.
Wow. Hi, Gabby. Welcome. All right. I have a oh, we're doing the 1 minute summary. So
Yes.
this is a book about very rich Asian
Oh,
people.
yes. As disclosed in the title.
I mean, it's pretty much like two really ancient Chinese families that become wealthy, and then it's kind of this dichotomy between the old money and the new money in Singapore, especially. And it revolves around Nicholas Yeung, who is basically the heir of one of the really big pockets of old money, and then Rachel Chu, who's a professor at NYU, and she doesn't know what the hell she's getting herself
No,
into.
absolutely not.
Yeah, and she's not from a very distinguished place,
Or family.
yeah, family, at least in terms of lineage. So she gets to visit, and Nicholas apparently doesn't tell her anything about his life before she comes.
Boarding the plane.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, so I really liked this book.
I actually liked it too.
Yeah.
And what I liked about reading it so quickly is that there wasn't time for me to forget about the lineage,
Oh,
because
yeah.
that's one of the hardest things to keep track of.
Yeah, I read this, I think, in October. So, my lineage is very, very
Yeah,
distant memories.
and I mean, there's a family tree at the beginning of the book, but it's
Yeah.
not like located effectively enough for you to turn back to it all the time.
Yeah, I feel like I need a like a separate sheet, like
I
a
need like
loose
a
leaf.
bookmark, you know, like
Yeah.
family lineage.
Yeah. So I can reference
I know,
it.
right? Because there were chapters, like random chapters, and maybe only one or two about just like
Yeah, it goes on and on and
just
on.
random people that you've never heard of before.
Yeah. And that never come back up really.
Yeah,
But
and so you're
they
like,
feel that important to mention it, so I would be reading and then it was plot, 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 and then, oh, we're gonna go back 16 generations.
True. Well, also what I found about this book is that it's mostly dialogue. So
Yeah.
it's kind of hard to keep track of, especially if you're speed reading like I was, like keeping track of like who's saying what and when, even though it's not like an overwhelming thing to read. Like, you know, it's not really an academic book,
Yeah,
I wouldn't
yeah.
say,
But
but
still, like when they were at the I think it was the golf club, and they're like the family was having dinner, and it wouldn't specify who was saying what. You just had to kind
oh,
of
yeah.
figure out who was saying what. I had to reread those sections like seven times to figure
Yeah.
out who exactly was saying, except for Alistair. I knew exactly when Alistair was talking.
Oh, yeah. And that's the first time that we get introduced to like Eddie and all of them. Okay, one of my questions was, what is the importance of Eddie?
I
Ugh.
don't
Like,
know.
what did he add at all to the book?
His name, I suppose.
I mean, because he's a very abusive character, especially towards his like three children who are just perfect. And he was
Yeah.
portrayed in the movie kind of a douche in a douchey way, but
It
not like
wasn't accurate
really.
to the book.
Yeah.
I think that was probably to represent the Asian strictness. Because, well, honestly, Annette and every other character, they were strict about their image, but not with each other, I suppose.
Yeah, like not to that extent.
Yeah, so I
Yeah.
guess that was the importance of him, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt maybe also it was to break up some of the mundanity, especially when it came to, like, dress after dress, after character after character.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Eddie is pretty, like, distinctive in the book as a whole. Oh, I wanted to ask, how well does the author do at portraying the lifestyle, do you think?
Oh, I think he did a pretty good job. Because I saw them, like I said, I saw the movie first. And so it was easier for me to imagine, I suppose, the style they were living. Because I think if I were to have read this first, it would have been very hard for me. And probably you, because we clearly aren't crazy magicians. So I probably wouldn't have pictured them to be as rich, or have been able to comprehend how rich they were until I visually saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the movie showed us. So I think he did as best a job as he could for people who just don't understand that lifestyle.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, like, I think when you're in it, like, especially in the first few chapters, I remember just, like, lists of, like, designers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just, like, oh, she had shoes from Armani and Gibini, or I don't even know.
You could list, like, Italian spaghetti names and last names, and I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I also watched the movie first, and I just think that that was such a helpful visual guide. And especially since the movie is, like, I'd say 90% realistic in terms of, like, the book compared
to... Yeah, I think the movie did a good job. The only thing is, like we mentioned before, the side characters, they just weren't... They had to much more depth in the book, but that's expected because it's the book.
Yeah, but I mean, superficially, like, I definitely recognized, like, I had a face for every one of the little characters, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, some of them, I think, were combined, like, two characters combined into one character, which is interesting. And also, like, okay, in terms of other differences, her friend, Paiklin, is so different in the movie than in the book.
Yeah.
Like, what? Oh my, that was really jarring to me when I was reading it. I was like, I don't understand. I like Paiklin in the movie better.
Yeah, me too. I also love the actress. I don't know her name, but I know I just love her. She's she's really good. But
I
felt like in the movie, it's not that she cared for Rachel more, but I could see her being like a real type of, like, person I would have as a friend. Because in the book, she just seemed very specific to Rachel's friendship. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, also, they both, or Rachel at least, went to Stanford and then Northwestern. She's like, oh, I'm used to these people from those places. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Mackenzie.
I'm like, that is not my experience at all. I'm like, where can I find my own Paiklin? Like, oh my gosh.
Just post on the Northwestern Facebook page. So, anyone
live in Singapore?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it is very, like, there are huge Asian populations at those schools, and I'm, like, one to talk because I'm half Asian, so I put Asian on my transcript, so.
No, yeah, even at the U of A, there's a big Asian population, which, like, it just always surprises me. I don't know. It's not, like, weird or anything, but I'm always just, like, I never see them around in Tucson, or I just see them at the university.
Yeah, it's
like,
where did you come from? One of the other glaring differences, besides, like, Astrid and Michael's, like, whole thing, it's not explained at all in the movie.
That's true.
Is that they don't actually get engaged in the first book.
I noticed that too.
Yeah,
I was waiting for that.
Like, he says several times, like, he plans an engagement event, but the mother and grandmother, like, break it up, and so he never actually gets to propose to her.
But towards the end,
it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that he intends to propose, or if it wasn't a trilogy, then we could assume that he proposed.
Yeah, definitely. How well does this book stand on its own, do you think?
If it were a single book, it might have, in my opinion, made it more successful. Because at least for me, after reading this book, or even say if I read halfway through this book and I was interested in reading the trilogy, I wouldn't be interested anymore just because of the way this book is styled. And like you said, it is just a gossip magazine.
Yeah.
And so, but I think it does both a good job and a bad job on standing on its own. I think it does a good job because it's like we obviously both finished the book, and yeah. so we both clearly enjoyed it. But having said that, we both kind of agree we wouldn't keep reading the trilogy, and mm-hmm. so I wonder if maybe or even people who saw the movie first and then were interested in reading the book, but then they saw it as a trilogy, might have been unattractive deterred, yeah. of reading yeah the book. So I don't know. I think it just depends what you like and what you don't like, mm-hmm. clearly. But I would say overall, it does a pretty okay job.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I mean, like, especially just, like, the overall readability of it is really high. And that makes, like, it more accessible to people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. The question of whether or not to read the trilogy is hard because I would definitely need some distance, especially after my, like, marathon reading this book.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. So I was researching Kevin Kwan, the author's mm-hmm. background.
I just saw a picture of him for the first
time. I know, right?
I was like, oh my
God. Is not what you expect.
He looks like what I would imagine Bernard to look like. Or no, yes, Alistair.
Yes, one of them.
Whoever married the... Oh, I always get them confused. Whoever married the...
Colin?
The stripper, the Asian
oh,
model.
Bernard.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's what I imagine Bernard to look like.
Yeah, me too. I think they do look very similar in the movie.
Yeah.
Does he play
too.
Bernard in the movie?
I would not be surprised.
Oh my gosh. So actually, like, he is Singaporean. Like, I don't know. It's almost like he wanted to give... Well, there is an article that I linked in the description about... it's from the Washington Post, just about his upbringing and stuff of that nature, which I think does add a lot to his credibility. Like, you're kind of reading this, like, this is more imaginary than realistic at mm-hmm. points. Like, yeah. especially in terms of, like, the actual grandeur of mm-hmm. where they're living. And the movie was filmed, like, at the actual mansions of people.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so he obviously did know what he was talking about after all. I forgot to bring this up in terms of the movie, but it made a lot of splash because of the all-Asian cast.
Yeah, which I really liked because, I mean, clearly we need more diversity in movies, and we're definitely getting that more in 2018, and I can only imagine what 2019 is going to bring, but I really liked it, and not for a lot of people, but for some people, they were just shocked that they couldn't have, like, any... non-Asian characters, and the movie did as successful as it did. Mm. And I'm just flabbergasted by that because I absolutely love the cast. I thought they did amazing yeah. casting on everyone. So.
Yeah, it was an A-list cast too. Yeah. So yeah, and it was cool. Like, I'm half Asian, right? So mm-hmm. it was nice to see that because I've never seen a movie before with, like, mm-hmm. all people of, like, the same ethnicity of
yeah.
me. So
that's what I thought when I first saw that movie, Moonlight.
Oh yeah.
Last year. I think it was last year. Because that film already had a very small cast. And then they were also, as far as I can remember, they were all African-American of some sort. So it was just so nice to see, refreshing to see, mm-hmm. that they didn't need to just put someone who was Caucasian in there. Just
yeah,
to,
right?
Just to make it on the billboard.
Actually, so I have some stats on this. This movie, it has been 25 years since the last movie with an all-Asian cast.
When was the first one?
The last one was 1993, The Joy Luck Club, which I think actually does a better job of articulating, like, the relationship between Asian Americans and their fully Asian parents.
Oh, really? I've never seen it, so...
Yeah, it's a book by Amy Tan. I read it last year, so I'm like, it's fresh in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. And one of my favorite parts of that book is that she just articulates those kinds of relationships so well. Like, for example, there's a line that says, like, her mother talked to her in, like, Shanghainese or Cantonese, and she, like, responded back in English,
yeah.
which is, like, what Rachel does in this book as well. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, there's even a language barrier between their parents and the children. There's often, like, a lack of understanding mm-hmm. with parents who are immigrants. So that just, like, hit me. I was like, that makes so much sense
oh,
to
yeah,
me, you know?
Definitely. My best friend is Asian, and her mom will constantly talk to her. And her mom speaks a few dialects, but she constantly talks to her in Vietnamese. And my friend Ashley doesn't speak Vietnamese at all, but she can understand it and she'll respond in English. And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and then there are people like my dad, for example, doesn't really speak Korean anymore mm-hmm. because he wanted to assimilate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just like sad that that culture has been lost. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun being at college because my roommate Minju is like fully Korean, and always like make kimchi and stuff together. Oh. So
it's great.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
Oh, and also I was gonna I'll put this before, but the last movie before that one was like 35 years before that. In 1961, it was called Flowers Drum Song. It was not popular at all. So
yeah, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, me either. So. Oh, and another fun fact is that I have so many facts. Okay. The grandmother, the Shi Yu Lin character, mm-hmm. is in Crazy Rich Asians, was also in Joy Luck Club.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. So, and there were a few other characters as well, but they were minor.
Oh, I thought it was interesting going back onto, Eddie's character, when he, in the book, his son spills Fanta Orange all over his DC.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, that just completely ruins, like, most basically everyone's day, which I just thought was really interesting, but also just really sad. I couldn't imagine living with a family that strict, or at least a dad that strict, where mm-hmm. that, like, just making just a mistake like that just ruins.
I know. What struck me about this book is that it was a vehicle to make Asian culture more accessible, and so he did include the spectrum, like, there is actually a lot of infidelity in Asia, which is something that I've, like, picked up from reading, like, a lot of contemporary Asian authors. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, like, Haruki Murakami and Kazuo Ishiguro, they both have a lot of infidelity in their books. And, you know, they explore, like, the darker sides of culture as well, like suicide.
Yeah. Which is something that you definitely didn't talk about in Asia. Like, yeah. Not even, like, 30 years ago even.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about this new, like, breed of authors mm-hmm. That are, you know, Asian American, is that they're able to Americanize Asian culture in a way that brings it here.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool to me.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, Singapore is really special in that you can't really recreate anything like that mm-hmm. in America because it's just not culturally yeah. acceptable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was weird because, like, I never, before reading this book or, like, seeing the movie, I never really understood, like, the extent of wealth, like, in some Asian countries. Yeah. Like, I had never really, like, thought about Singapore before.
Neither had I. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, it was jarring to me because, like, I come from Asia, basically. So it's, like, I don't know. I had always grown up with, like, the you've got to be modest, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was like, a whole new world. Really?
Wow, Singapore.
I know, that's on my list of travel places. We'll see.
Oh, me too now.
I know.
If I don't stay in one of those mansions, though, I don't know if I want to go. Just kidding.
Asia compared to Europe. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Like, I thought that they were strikingly similar, and that was something that I was really surprised about.
Yeah.
Like, Europe doesn't deify food as much, but...
Yeah, in Singapore, that is on another... Food is just another pedestal of holiness there.
It's true. Oh, my gosh.
But I thought it was interesting, or now even now that I think about it, just how important bloodline is for both Europe and Asia.
That's yeah,
just
right? Interesting,
because I'm just thinking about Downton Abbey right now. And
oh, you.
Who Tom married the daughter
yeah.
in Downton Abbey, and the family
and
just
the family was like freaking out.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's just it's the exact same scenario as when Nick wanted to marry Rachel. So I just think that's so interesting. But I don't know why I never made the connection until now, because I don't know if it's just like a cultural thing that I just couldn't.
All the similarities, like the education being really important, mm-hmm. and like. Everyone speaking multiple languages, mm-hmm. like, you know, in Europe, you probably speak, like, English, German, and French, at least.
Yeah.
And then in...
You can understand German. And
yeah. And, like, yeah, and then in, like, this book, you speak Cantonese, and, like, at the high school level in both Asia and in Europe is when they specialize the schools.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a school for, like, auto mechanics, but it's, like, high school. So, they're sending, like, their 15-year-olds to, like, be an auto mechanic,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, a very respectable job.
In
especially in that society.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, I don't know, I could never imagine, I guess, picking out what I wanted to do at, like, a high school level. But at the same time, I didn't go through that education system, so maybe if I'd gone through there, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I totally want to do this or that.
I know.
I'm 13.
Yeah, right? Because, like, 50% of college students in America change their major at least once.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just, like, there is a theory in social psychology that says delay specialization as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That makes for more successful stewards of whatever craft.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, you have, like, 25-year-olds, and they're just, like, in college for 6 years, and they have no freaking clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is, that's teach on them.
But, yeah.
But, yeah. it's just different. I mean, yeah, it's just different looking at it, and it was cool to, like, step into that world, especially since I read it for, like, 8 hours and was, like, in that world.
No. On the topic of waiting as long as you can to specialize, I read just recently, I think Duke and I think Princeton and a few other colleges are giving students who just graduate high school starting next year a year off or money to take a gap year, like it's popular to do in Europe, because a lot of times in America, if you take a gap year, all of your it's frowned upon, and all of your scholarship opportunities just go down the drain.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but now they're giving students the opportunity that if they're not ready, if they don't think they're ready for college, to just take a gap year and mature and then come back.
I wish I could take a gap year.
Right?
My last and most important question that I have structured, at least,
is
this work is actually a satire.
I can see that. As a very satire person myself, I read it as such. So, and trust me, I've been at school and people tell me, Gabby, can you stop being so sarcastic? And I'm like, I'm sorry. It's the Romanian blood in me.
Yeah, I mean, so you think this work functions pretty well as a satire?
I think so.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
How well does the movie function as a satire?
Oh, not very well.
Yeah.
No.
I was like, yeah. It threw me seeing the movie first. I mean, because the only characters with depth, really, are Rachel and Nicholas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and pretty much everyone else
and
is
Rachel's
one-sided.
Mom.
Yeah, and Rachel's mom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I understand she needed depth, but that was just because of Rachel also. So, yeah, her mom had absolutely no depth, which frustrated me because she was just, in the movie, it just seemed like she was being mean just to be mean. And, like, granted, protect her family name, yada, 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 but, like, you didn't get really any reason as to why.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the one we had talked about recently, but,
yeah,
that's Astrid, okay, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, her husband's Michael.
Yeah. That was the one that threw me for a whirl when I was reading the book, because then there's this whole, like, side plot of her gonna go find out what he's doing, and I'm like, where is this in the movie?
I know, right? It's like the last 100 pages are, like, totally unaddressed, so you're like, wonderful.
I know.
Yeah, that took me a lot. Like, I realized, because, you know, like, I time myself when I'm reading, so I realized I got through, like, 400 pages pretty average, but then, like, the last 100 pages took me, like, so long.
In Mackenzie world.
Yeah, because it's just, it was new, number one, and it was confusing, number two, especially, like, since I was relying on imagery from the movie, I was what?
Yeah, which I guess is a downside of seeing the movie first, because if something doesn't happen in the movie, you're like, we're going off the rails here, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I was confused by that whole scenario.
Yeah, I feel like they wanted to decriminalize Michael in a way, but I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing yet, really. I haven't really made up my mind, because at the same, like, at one time, it makes sense, I guess, because it shows that even people who are married into this family, they didn't approve of before, they can't always handle it, I suppose. But at the same time, it felt like a something that could have been Rachel's plot down the road, like, in the sequel.
Yeah,
whether or not the sequel was about her, that could have been something that the author explored through Rachel, which I think would have made more sense to the reader instead of just giving this plot to a character we don't super like, I suppose.
Yeah, and we're not really familiar with him. Like, we don't really know anything other than he has, like, a tech startup, and he's married to Astrid, and he's having an affair, supposedly. Mm-hmm. But, like, spoiler alert, in the book, he fakes the affair.
Yeah. It was never really answered, I suppose.
Yeah, he fakes the affair because his cousin needed help with her baby son.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, faked that...
He wanted them to break up, but she wanted him to be mad at her. Or her to be mad at him.
Yeah, right. So he wanted to, like, put the blame on him to protect her family name.
Yeah.
Because he was so overwhelmed with the family situation. But he wasn't actually having an affair.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that Astrid struggles with as well in the book, is, like, is he actually having an affair? Like, what's up? We don't know.
We don't know. No, yeah.
Popular fiction is popular fiction for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, it's readable.
It's an easy read, yeah.
It's contemporary, usually. Mm-hmm. Like, I would really love to see, like, a classic work of fiction, like, take the top charts. I mean, considering, actually, like, the viewership on this podcast, the most viewed episodes are Edgar Allan Poe's poetry and A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
That's interesting.
So, I mean, it is interesting because I do, like, I read mostly classics, so I also review mostly classics. Yeah. But we have done, like, some contemporary books and, like, some avant-garde ones as well. So, yeah, it's just cool to see, like, that lit is actually being brought back to the people.
Or at least people are interested, maybe not so much in reading it, but,
in
hearing
about it.
More about the story.
Right, yeah.
Because it is hard to read those classics
I know.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's like...
You of all people would know.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's hard for me to... Not to, like, empathize, because, like, I know how it is, but... Also, I've been reading so many classics for so long that, like, I find them quite palatable now, whereas, like, these books are actually harder for me to read sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not used to them. Like, actually, Toni Morrison, she has a book coming out this year, I think in March or April, and she was a Nobel winner in 1996, I think. And she gave a talk at Northwestern, and one of my friends went, she was saying that Toni Morrison grew up basically only around classics.
Okay.
And so that's basically all she read until she went off to college, which was interesting to me because you can definitely see how it influences her writing.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the more you read classics, like, the easier they are to read. Mm. And so it was just kind of cool because she definitely became, like, a more quote-unquote literary author because of her exposure to classics early on.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I just think it's so important.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's my peg for the day.
Definitely. Everyone, read your classics 2019.
Oh my gosh. So do you have anything else you want to touch on?
I think the only other thing, and I think we both relate to this more because we're musicians.
Yeah.
So the quote was, it's one of the times they're having dinner, and I don't know who's saying this because they're doing that thing where they jump around. I think Michael's saying this, but he says, come on, Law, you know it's true. Last time we had to sit through a whole piano recital by that Ling Ling guy. I just thought that was so funny.
So did I. Yes. I was sitting there like, oh God, I hope Gabby mentions this.
Yeah, I only highlighted 7 things, and that was, like, the first thing I highlighted.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
I know, it was just so funny.
That's like when people tell me they don't know who Yo-Yo Ma is, or like H.I. Perlman, I'm like, girl, I'm gonna link these guys in the description for y'all. Check them out, please, if you have no idea what we're talking about.
I promise you've heard Bach Prelude 1, because it's in like every car commercial around Christmas time.
Oh my gosh.
So that is my final thing for this podcast.
Wow.
Everyone go listen to Ling Ling. But okay. Correction, it's actually Lang Lang, pianist.
Yeah,
come
Lang
on,
Lang. Yo, he's so good.
I know, oh my gosh.
Okay, so also linked in this description today are the Crazy Rich Asians IRL link, which takes you to a Straits Times article about the actual Crazy Rich Asians that Kwan wrote about, and there's this one guy who talks about how he relates to Astrid because she's nice. So That's worth checking out. There's also the history behind Hollywood and Asian Americans, which is really cool because I never really considered like that there was a history.
Yeah, yeah.
And it talks about, it's from the Chicago Tribune, it talks about the other movies with all Asian casts and what the politics were behind them at the times. And then the other two articles that I already mentioned, which were the one about the actual Crazy Rich Asians movie and like where the sets were and all that, and then about the author from the Washington Post.
Actually, my weekly favorite is just for film in general, because yesterday I went to the Loft, which is an independent movie theater here where we live, and I saw two movies. Man, I just love movies, y'all. Just go see a movie.
It's true. Oh my gosh.
Especially an independent movie. I saw, it was from this studio in Japan. It wasn't Studio Ghibli, but it was similar, and the film was called Mirai. So anyone, just go see that film, Mirai.
Ooh.
It was very, very cute. A little weird, but very cute.
Aww. Yes, okay, Andrea Bocelli, he's an Italian singer. He just came out with an album called C, and it's so good. I've been listening to it, like, nonstop. Oh, my God.
We had lunch, and he serenaded us.
I know. He's like Italian Disney, okay? He's so good. Okay, I got these earrings from Pamela Carr Jewelry. She's an independent jewelry owner in Canada.
Ooh.
They're really beautiful, and I can't stop wearing them, and I know it's bad because they're, like, good metal or whatever, but like they're so beautiful. I really recommend her.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah,
and they have a really great message, and Pamela Carr designs all of her jewelry around famous art pieces.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so the earrings that I got were based off of this statue in Vienna from like the
1400s. Oh, that's cool.
And so it's like art about art, which is like the best thing ever.
It's not just a Gucci bag with the Mona Lisa.
I know, right?
That's awful.
Crazy rotation. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. This is so much fun.
If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there's an episode of DHNI for everyone, so I recommend checking out our back catalog of episodes. If you need some guidance, however, try episode 16 on how to read a book a week. It is still February, so there's plenty of time for y'all to catch up on reading a book a week. 2019 is the year of Didion. I've just finished my fifth book by her out of 16. So if you'd like to follow along in my quest to read Joan Didion's collective works or read more about the movement to bring lit back to people, everything can be found at didionandhawthorne.blueberry.net. And remember that blueberry is spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Now you can also follow the show on Twitter with @DidionIn, 2 N's total. I'll be posting about new lit releases, reading lists, and of course new projects and episodes relating to DHNI, including our Love of February series that we are now starting. Also, stay tuned for the next episode. In 2 days' time, we'll be analyzing some first editions.
Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!